news. Today there has been another abduction. No one really knows what happened, and there was no mystery left behind. Who are these voices from the attic?
Hello, spooksters. Welcome back to Voices from the Attic. Today's episode is episode 20, The I-70 Killer. Now, we're only on tier one of the conspiracy iceberg, or the mystery iceberg, I should say, and this one really got my attention. So let's dive into it, get a nice coffee and some snacks, because this one bites. So, who is and what is the I-70 Killer? It all began back in the year I was born, 1992 April. A string of murders started occurring in various locations on Interstate 70, ranging from Indiana, Indianapolis, Wichita, Kansas, and Missouri. These horrible murders lasted until May, and it stopped as quickly as it began. However, the police believe this unidentified killer has ties to nine altogether, three of which in 1993 to 1994. Although connected to nine murders, only six are confirmed. Five women and a male, which was a mistake on the killer's part. Now, before I do continue, the I-70 killer and the I-70 strangler are two different things, so we're not going to be talking about the strangler today. We're going to be talking about the killer. So, even to this day, the I-70 killer is unidentified. Like, no one has been able to work out who he was, and his nickname derives from the fact that several of the shops in which his victims worked were located a few miles, which I mentioned earlier, of the Interstate 70. So he had a quick one run and go, basically. Now, with his victims, he specifically went for ones that were quite young, petite, brunette women. But as I said earlier, one of the victims was a man, but I think what the killer may have expected in this scenario and what caused this is he may have expected a woman in the store due to the store having a woman's name, because all of the stores that were previously attacked were specialty stores and were usually only robbed on small amounts of cash. He's also suspected of shooting three more store clerks in Texas during 1993 and 1994. And now one of those did survive, as well as a 2001 murder of a store clerk in Trier-Curty, Indiana. I hope I'm saying this right. Despite that case being featured in Unsolved Mysteries, America's Most Wanted, and Dark Minds, the killer is yet to be identified, and investigators have not publicly identified any suspects at all. So here's the crazy thing, because the span of the crimes goes all the way to 2001, the killer could still be out there right now, even just listening to this podcast about themselves. In total, the victims that were murdered were 6 to 9. And the only thing they really have of the killer is a height, which is 7 foot and 9 inches. And the sketches are, you can't really tell what they are. Some of the sketches vary and they look very different from one another. So you can't really tell who he is, except a Caucasian man that is 5'7"-ish with a bit of a stubble beard and a long nose. That's kind of what I see from the images. So let's dive into the 1992 murder spree. We're going to begin with Robin Faldura. The killing spree began on April 8th, as previously stated, in 1992, with the murder of 26-year-old Payless Shoe Source manager Robin in Indianapolis, there you go, that's how you say it. I don't know how to say American names sometimes, I do apologise. She was alone in the store when she was shot, having been murdered sometime around 1:30. Her body was discovered in a storage room in the back of a store around 3 p.m. Less than $100 had been stolen from the cash register. Creepy. Okay, so he didn't do anything to that body, so that's okay. No, not really okay, but like he didn't like peel her skin off or anything. Well, that was just the first victim. So let's see what happens next. So the second victim, or should I say victims, is two people. The next day, two murders occurred on April 11th, for 2 days later, this happened. At the bridal shop in Wichita, the victims Patricia, which was 23, and the store's owner, 32-year-old Patricia Madges, and so it's Patricia Smith and Patricia Madges. As this is the only case involving multiple victims, investigators believe the killer was under the impression that there was only one woman in the store. The woman had stayed past the normal closing time of 6 p.m. to allow a male customer to pick up a item, basically. Sometime after 6 p.m, the woman allowed the killer into the store, thinking he was the customer they were waiting for. So after they were murdered, then the customer actually arrives. He's like, honey, I'm home. And then there's no one there because the killer's just left. So he comes to face to face with the killer. So he was probably one of the only people that really saw this killer in the story. Now, the customer noticed that the killer had a gun, and the killer asked the customer to come with him to the back of the store. I mean, that sounds really dodgy. So the customer did refuse, after which the killer told him to leave the scene. Had the customer cooperated with the killer, he almost certainly would have been murdered as well, because, you know, never go into the back store with this guy that has a creepy gun that is suspiciously in the store. The customer was so frightened that he did not report the incident until more than an hour had passed. He later provided details of a sketch of the killer, describing the killer as a slender white man. Okay, so they have kind of a description, with reddish hair, armed with a Uzi-style gun. Now let's fast forwards to April 27th. Now this victim is called Michael, so this may have been the one that was the mistake. Now Michael was 40 years old. His full name is Michael McCown. He was killed in his mother Sylvia's ceramic store in Indiana around 4 p.m. Now his wallet and less than $50 were stolen from the store. No witnesses reported seeing the killer beforehand, and he was the only man killed during the spree. As I said, it is believed that the killer chose the store because it had Sylvia's ceramics as the store. So it seemed like the perfect place to find Sylvia, and in fact, he found Michael. Now, because he was reported to wear his hair in a ponytail, he was shot from behind while he was kneeling to stock shelves. He may have been mistaken. So the killer's just gone straight in there, pow, done that really quickly, realised and then escaped. Now, so that was April the 27th. We're going to go a little bit to May now, May the 3rd. Our next victim is Nancy. She was 24 years old and was killed while working alone at Boot Village, a footwear store, which is in Missouri. She opened up the store at noon and was found dead by customers at 2:30. So there's quite a big gap between being found and her being murdered. So we're going to go just a few days further, and then this victim is called Sarah Blessing. She's the final confirmed murder that occurred on May the 7th in Missouri. She was 37 years old, and she was working in her gift shop. The murder occurred during the day, and the owner of the video store next to Blessing's shop saw the killer enter the shop, heard a pop, and then saw him leave. He discovered Blessing's body after checking to see what had occurred in the store. A clerk at a nearby grocery store also saw the suspect. He was climbing a hill towards I-70, so a few more people have actually seen him. Now, so this is the murder spree that happens. Now, once the May the 7th one has happened, there is a break. And then we take ourselves all the way to, well, a year later, 1993, Texas murders. Now, there's two more murders that occur in 1993 and an attempted murder that happened in 1994. These all happened in Texas. The two murder victims were 51-year-old Mary Ann Gloscock, who was killed on September the 25th, 1993, at the antique store, and 22-year-old Amy Vess, who was shot to death in a dance apparel store on November 1st. The surviving victim was Vicky Webb. Now, she was 35 and she was shot January the 15th, 1994, in Houston at a gift shop. She did briefly speak to the shooter before he shot her in the back of the head, so he seems to enjoy shooting people from behind. The bullet did not penetrate into Webb's head due to a large vertebrae being hit. The shotter attempted to shoot her again, but his gun misfired, and he left presuming she was dead. So she must have entirely seen him. She spoke to the shooter, so she then probably turns around. He shoots her in the back of the head. You know, bang. Thinks she might be dying. She survives. but then he tries to shoot again, so maybe she's still turned around and she hasn't turned to face him at that point. So she probably didn't see his face or was in too much shock all of a sudden. I would be in too much shock. I wouldn't know what to do. I just lie on the ground and pretend to be dead. If I knew I was alive, I'd pretend to be dead. Dead. I'm dead. Leave me alone, please. Thank you. The modus operandi of the Texas killer was very similar to the 170, and he used a very similar firearm, basically the same, because what they did is they then took and did a ballistics test to determine which gun was basically used in the Texas murders. They did say it was not the same as the one used in the 170 killings, however, so investigators have not been able to confirm if he was even responsible for these. But if, I would say though, even if the ballistics is wrong, he's probably got a different gun in that time because he doesn't want to keep the weapon on him because he's done a few murders. So he probably got rid of the weapon and then got a new weapon to then begin this spree again in a sense. So I know the ballistics determined it was not exactly the same gun, but if he's shooting the victims in a very same way and he's going for victims that are very similar, females, the same kind of gift shops and so forth, it remains to show a pattern here, yeah? So let's go forwards all the way to 2001. That's insanely fresh. We're going to November 2021. Now, Terre Haute police announced that the I-7 killer was a possible suspect in the 2001 murder of a liquor store clerk, Billy Brossman. Now, this occurred on the evening of November the 30th, 2001. He was working alone, and he was working at a liquor store, this guy. Now, security footage showed a white male suspect enter the store and pull a gun on him and rob the cash register. Now, they looked at the footage to see what happened next. Basically, the footage showed that the suspect led him all the way to the back of the store and then shot him in the head with a single bullet. Exactly like the other murder that happened with Michael as well. It was very similar. Now, the only thing that's unlike the other murders is the security footage of a killer exists and police have stated they have a person of interest in the case. So, I don't know when they said this, but no one has been called into, you know, this case has not been closed, so it's currently still open, even though they may have a person of interest in mind. Now, it's been about 24 years, maybe? I think this 24 years? 24, 25 years since this case has happened. And there is still no motive that has been established. The victims were not sexually assaulted, and there was only a small amount of money that was taken from every single store. They do know that the person now is 5'7", and he weighs about 140 to 160 pounds with light brown hair, or red hair, because he could dye his hair any colour. And this case remains unsolved. So what we're going to do as well is we're going to quickly dive into some conspiracies of who this person might be, because currently he still remains as someone that used the highways as the greatest getaway, and no one knows who he is. Now, let's dive into those conspiracies. But before I do, if you've got to this far in the podcast, thank you so much for listening. Basically, it's amazing doing these and you enjoying them. Well, I hope you do. If you do enjoy, please do like this podcast, add it to your list, because every week there's a brand new podcast, so it keeps you updated on when an episode is out, so you never miss another one. And if you're listening on iTunes somewhere in the world, please do review this podcast, because it helps people see it too. Now, some possible leads. Some of the leads that were followed was a lead to Herb Bumister, and he was from Indiana. He was a businessman who traveled quite frequently. What happened next did create a shockwave of terror that was entirely unexpected. So they went all the way to this guy's house, and the minute they got there, shit started getting real, because they found a vast amount of skeletal remains that totaled about 11 people. All these remains, though, were believed to be male and were believed to be homosexual. Out of the 11, 8 of them were reported missing. And shortly after this did happen, Herb did commit suicide. And it was also found out that he had throat cancer, but was currently in remission. He also owned a .22 semi-automatic, which helped further the belief of him being the I-7O killer. Although there is one thing that this lacks. It's that there weren't any female remains at his property. So this was awkward because it left them in a very tight situation, because either he was the person that murdered these women and also these male killers, or there was two different serial killers that were operating around the same time frame. And these were all incredibly close and next to each other in the states that these people were murdered. Some people think that he might have links to the Zodiac Killer, but that's a very far stretch and just trying to, you know, put them all together. So basically, in my opinion, I think this person was someone that was maybe a truck driver or a salesman, someone that did travel around quite a lot and know the highways and know how to get or where to get to different places very quickly and get the hell out of there. I'm still stumped on the motivation, though, because he didn't do anything to the bodies. He just murdered the bodies, the people, and then he took a small amount of money, so he wasn't doing it for the cash. He must have been doing it for the thrill. But why? That's a question in itself. And as I said, this killer could still be out there to this very day, so stay safe, stay careful. Thank you for listening to another episode of Voices from the Attic. And until next week, see you later, Speaksters.
Breaking news. Today there has been another abduction. No one really knows what happened, and there was no mystery left behind. Who are these voices from the attic?